It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces said Tuesday they seized the last remaining areas of Raqqa, Syria, from Islamic State militants. And the American-led coalition fighting IS said that the city was on the verge of liberation. That's in addition to Iraqi forces taking over more oil fields near the city of Kirkuk. Robert Raphael has more.
The military said Kurdish fighters withdrew from the Bai Hassan and Avana oil fields, leaving federal security forces to take over. Tuesday's developments followed a swift move by government forces Monday to capture the Kirkuk governor's office, key military sites, and an oil field.
Islamic State still controls areas around the eastern province and further south in the Euphrates River Valley. Iraqi forces advanced rapidly through the northern reaches of the country Tuesday, recapturing territory in the two largest oil fields from the Kurds, virtually ending their hopes for an independent state. Iraqi oil minister said that Baghdad would now try to boost production of the Kirkuk oil fields to more than 1 million barrels per day. At least 52 people are dead and 200 more are wounded in a terrorist attack on a police training center in eastern Afghanistan Tuesday. Officials say that the attack began when a suicide bomber detonated a car filled with explosives near the training center in Gardez, the capital of the Paktia province. After the explosion, a group of gunmen stormed the center and engaged in a shootout with the police. A source in the provincial government said the chief of the police was killed in the attack, and the Taliban has, in fact, claimed responsibility for the attack. This is VOA News. Thousands more Rohingya refugees have crossed the border from Myanmar to Bangladesh since late Sunday. The United Nations Refugee Agency said Tuesday that it brings the number to 582,000, the number of Rohingya who have fled the country since August 25th. The Myanmar military has been accused of widespread burning of Rohingya villages, rape, killings, looting, and the laying of landmines to prevent people from returning to their homes. The violence follows deadly attacks carried out by Rohingya militants on August 25th against state security forces. It is now estimated that between 10,000 and 15,000 more people are waiting to cross near the border in Bangladesh. U.S. law enforcement officials have announced Tuesday the indictments of two Chinese nationals and their North American associates charged with manufacturing and distributing fentanyl and other opioids in the United States, highlighting China's role as a global supplier of illicit opiate substances. U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein describing the investigation that eventually led to the second man's indictment.
The agents and prosecutors traced the source of those illegal drugs back to China. They found that they had gone through Oregon and Canada and had originated with a man named John Jiang in China. They learned that Jiang ran the organization that manufactured fentanyl in at least four different labs in China, and that he advertised and sold the fentanyl to U.S. customers over the Internet.
The indictments come amid a brewing scandal in the United States over the role President Trump's nominee to head the Drug Enforcement Agency played in passing legislation that undercut the agency's ability to target manufacturers of opioids. Spain's top court has ruled that Catalonia's independence referendum is illegal.
Behind bars on Tuesday, the leaders of Catalonia's two main separatist groups, pending trial for sedition as Spain's worst political crisis in decades deepens. They're jailing Monday night, sparking protests and a government walkout on Tuesday. Catalonia is refusing to renounce its symbolic declaration of independence. Madrid has given Catalan leaders until Thursday to do so.
I això és el que nosaltres insistim i que és el que mateix que direm dijous. Dijous els direm, escolti, no direm res diferent que dilluns. Volen seure i parlem. Hi ha un clamor de parli vostès que poden. Nosaltres volem i podem. Altres no volen.
So it looks ever more likely that Spain will impose direct rule on the autonomous region. Also under investigation, Catalonia's police chief, accused of failing to order his force to impose a ban on the independence referendum last month.
No és de llibertat.
While the two pro-independence leaders are accused of helping to orchestrate protests.
That's Lucy Fielder reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Togo's opposition parties will hold protests today in defiance of a government ban.
We are going to have the protest on Wednesday and also Thursday because the right to protest is a constitutional one. And we have a law organizing how we should protest.
Bridget Ajamagbo is coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties leading the protests in Togo. The United Nations says conditions in Central African Republic continue to deteriorate. Riek Machar will not attend the next IGAD high-level meeting, and the leader of one of the political parties in Liberia says he's exploring challenging the October 10th presidential election results.
There seems to have been a lot of irregularities, many instances where people were disenfranchised, ballot boxes being missing, where you have people who are registered to vote were denied because maybe their photograph also wasn't on the voter registry.
Lafayette Gould is chair of the Alternative National Congress Party of Liberia. The fate of Liberian warlord Mohamed Jabateh is now in the hands of a jury in the U.S. city of Philadelphia. And we'll look at censorship of hip-hop music in Gabon. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Togo's opposition political parties say they will hold protests today and tomorrow, Thursday, in defiance of a government ban. The protesters are calling for the resignation of President Faure Gnassingbé and a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which established a two-term limit for the presidency. The government has banned protests on weekdays, Monday through Friday, because it says such protests have been violent. The Canadian and United States governments on Tuesday issued security alerts to their citizens ahead of the fresh protests. Bridget Ajamagbo is a coordinator of the coalition of 14 political parties that are leading the protests. She says Togolese have a right under their constitution to protest, and the government cannot stop them.
We are going to have the protest on Wednesday and also Thursday.
Well, the government has said that you should not have protests during the week.
But, you know, the government doesn't have the right to do that because the right to protest is a constitutional one. And we have a law organizing how we should protest. And if the government want to prohibit it, they should send a bill to the parliament. We cannot accept that only two ministers just decide to prohibit the protest on working days.
Faure Gnassingbé is the acting chair of ECOWAS. Would the opposition like for ECOWAS to intervene in the crisis in your country?
Well, you know, it's a pity that he is the current chair. We, as Togolese, we think that he does not deserve this position because he is not at all a democratic head of state and he doesn't respect at all ECOWAS rules that states that there should be a limitation of the term of head of state in West Africa. And Togo is the only country in which the government doesn't accept this limitation of term. So it's just one of the causes of the crisis that we are having just now. So we think that he cannot be judge and party. So we don't trust ECOWAS as the organization led by him to help us to solve this problem we are having.
You want President Faure Gnassingbé to step down because of presidential term limit. The president wants a referendum for the Togolese people to authorize two-term limit for the presidency. Why don't you go to the referendum?
We don't want to go to the referendum because, you know, we are not yet a democratic country in which you can expect to have fair elections. And it's one of the problems we have in Togo. You know, the country only looks like a democratic one, but the deep nature of this regime is dictatorship.
Let me ask you, there was an incident on Tuesday where three people were killed, including two Togolese soldiers. What can you tell us about that?
You know, we think that it's the fault of the government because they've tried to arrest one imam. And the way they did it, by not respecting the law, was not accepted by the population. And people stood up and said, we want our imam to be back. So it has led to this death we are having. We think it's not acceptable.
But the government said that the protesters set up street barricades and they set fire to the ruling party headquarters.
You know, we cannot say that it's the fault of the protesters, because we have very accurate information that the government itself has prepared people to go on the road and do some violence. So for us, it's a lie when they say that the protesters have killed people.
It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup.
Je vous en prie.
Bridget Ajamangbo is the coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties that are leading the protests in Togo. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. The leader of the Alternative Congress Party in Liberia, Alexander Cummings, says he's exploring challenging what he calls the purported outcome of the October 10 presidential election results. Mr. Cummings, who, according to the most recent results, is in fourth place, cited irregularities, including stolen ballot boxes, mixed matched tally sheets, and intimidation of poll watchers. On the line from the Liberian capital, Monrovia, is Lafayette Gould, National Chair of the Alternative National Congress Party. Good morning to you, Mr. Gould, and thank you for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Good morning. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
Mr. Gould, what can you tell us here? Your candidate, Mr. Cummings, is he challenging the results of the election?
Well, you've said that. He's going to ensure that we investigate and ensure that the will of the Liberian people is what is reflected through the outcome. From our preliminary investigation, that is not what appears to be the case. And so we are getting some experts making all of the analysis and then make a determination thereafter. So initially, the results are being questioned, if you will.
Why are you questioning the results?
Well, as you well know, elections are governed by rules. There seems to have been a lot of irregularities, many instances where people were disenfranchised, where you have ballot boxes being missing, where you have people who are registered to vote were denied because maybe their photograph also wasn't on the voter registry. It's just so much of a lot of irregularities. The whole thing is a fiasco, I'm afraid to say. From our own analysis, the votes allocated to us doesn't seem reflective of what we know that we should have gotten and what we may have gotten. And so we're concerned about that. We want a true reflection of the people's will to prevail.
But Mr. Gould, isn't that a supposition to say that the votes allocated to Mr. Cummings do not reflect your expectation? Isn't that a supposition?
Well, no. The fact is, you have irregularities on the tally sheet. They do not add up. For instance, you have a standing rule that every polling place will have no more than 550 ballots, because it is presumed that up to 550 ballots will be at every polling place. Now, it's turning out that you have more than that. So it's, our analysis is showing that there are a lot of ballot excess in violation of the next own rule. And so we just want to take time and check everything up and make sure that the NEC itself didn't violate its own rule, allow for extra ballots to be introduced. And as it is, there are a lot of indication that some foul play may have taken place. And so we want to be extremely careful to make sure that we have something that is reflective of the people's will.
Mr. Cummings, according to the last tally or the last announcement by the National Elections Commission, Mr. Cummings is running fourth. So what do you say to people who might say, well, you're in the fourth place? Why challenge or why complain?
Well, you see, electoral event is one such that you want it to be indicative of people's will. And so no one knows why he may be in the fourth place in the first place. Maybe it's a result of these irregularities. And so I don't think it hurts the process to double-check and make an analysis to make sure that all of this happened. But, you know, the irregularities that occasioned this election seems to be a little too rampant. People seem to be disenfranchised. And so he wants to make sure, even if this does not change the outcome of the electoral process, we're hoping that it does, but if it doesn't, at least those things will be corrected and somebody else would not have to experience that again in the future.
Lafayette Gould is chair of the Alternative National Congress Party of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Today is Wednesday, October 18th, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The fate of Liberian warlord Mohamed Jabateh, notoriously known as Jungle Jabba, is now in the hands of a jury in the U.S. city of Philadelphia.
We think that this trial is historical because it is the first time ever that Liberian
The trial adjourned yesterday following closing arguments. Jabateh, a rebel commander during Liberia's 14-year civil war, is accused of committing rapes, murders, acts of ritual cannibalism, and enslavement. U.S. officials say Jabateh lied about his past on forms that he filled out to obtain political asylum and later permanent residency. Several witnesses have been brought from Liberia to testify against Mr. Jabateh. His lawyers only presented 10 character witnesses and asked prosecutors not to cross-examine them. Alan Werner is director of Civitas Maxima, a Geneva-based organization that represents forgotten victims of war crimes.
We think that this trial is historical because it is the first time ever that Liberian victims of the civil war are coming in a court of law and are confronting the person they say is responsible for the atrocities. Because as you know, there has been a staggering impunity in Liberia for the Liberian civil war with over 150,000 people killed and yet no justice.
Mr. Jabateh has said that he is not a war criminal, that he was protecting Liberians from Charles Taylor.
Well, it is absolutely correct, and nobody would deny that. So Mr. Jabateh is a Madingo. This is one of the 16 tribes in Liberia, and the Madingos were targeted by Charles Taylor and the NPFL, and Charles Taylor was targeting two ethnic groups in particular. One of them was the Madingo, and they were killing mercilessly the Madingo's people. So this is absolutely correct. The problem is that the evidence is showing that whilst fighting the war, they were committed atrocities themselves. And they were killing and raping and maiming and mutilating civilians themselves.
You mentioned that some witnesses have been testifying against Mr. Jabateh, and you mentioned compelling testimonies. What have the witnesses been saying? What have they been telling the court?
You see, this trial is particular because my understanding is that there was not the law in the United States to go after Mr. Jabateh for war crimes. So what they did is that they are going after Mr. Jabateh for perjury. So basically, they are saying that Mr. Jabateh lied to the U.S. immigration authorities because he didn't talk about everything he did during the war. Now, in order to prove that he lied, they have to prove that he committed atrocities during the war. Because if he didn't commit atrocities during the war, then he didn't lie. So in effect, in this trial, they have been calling, so far, 20 witnesses from Liberia. And these people have been testifying about killing, about cannibalism, about sexual violence, about sexual slavery.
What do you make of suggestions made by some Liberians that in order for them to be justice, for there to be justice, that those who might have committed any crimes during the war should face justice? On the other hand, some people are saying we need to go past that so that there will be some peace and reconciliation.
Okay. So, you see, me, I'm nobody to basically to tell victims, what they should feel. As you said, there are two categories, and there are many people who do not think that bygones should be bygones, and not because we told them that, but because they want justice, and those people, we do work for them, and we do represent them.
Alain Werner is the director of Civitas Maxima, a Geneva-based organization that represents forgotten victims of war crimes. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Philadelphia. The United Nations says conditions in Central African Republic have continued to deteriorate since a serious outbreak of intercommunal violence in mid-May between the Muslim Seleka and the largely Christian anti-Balaka armed groups. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Fighting in some parts of Central African Republic has become so intense, the United Nations and private aid agencies have had to suspend their activities. The UN humanitarian coordinator in the CAR, Najat Rochdi, says security has become so bad in the East, agencies have had to change their mode of operations.
We cannot do it anymore, business as usual, having bases, you know, here and there, but rather strengthening some hubs, actually, around a number of cities where the security is much more important, and from there fly in special emergency teams, a kind of surge teams.
Since January, the United Nations reports a 50% increase in the number of internally displaced people to 600,000. Refugee numbers also have increased to nearly 500,000. Rochdi says humanitarian operations in the country are suffering from severe underfunding. She says only 39% of the nearly $500 million appeal for this year has been received. Because of the lack of funding, she says food rations have had to be cut in half.
And that there are places where actually we have stopped the food distribution. We already have very serious worsening of the malnutrition situation. And for example, unfortunately, in the southeast, we started already seeing children dying from severe malnutrition.
Humanitarian coordinator Rochdi says there are unconfirmed reports that 10 children have died from malnutrition-related causes in the town of Zemio in southeastern CAR. She says shelter and protection concerns also are growing. Another cause for alarm is education. She says 400,000 children are not going to school. She warns nearly a whole generation of children who have lost out on education may not have a viable future, and this, she says, will spell disaster for the whole country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, says former South Sudan First Vice President Riek Machar will be a no-show at an upcoming high-level meeting aimed at revitalizing the August 2015 peace agreement.
IGAD's special envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Weiss, describes the consultative meeting IGAD ministers held with various South Sudanese parties as positive and constructive, but says Riek Machar will not directly participate in the high-level revitalization forum.
He will be represented there. So his idea, his thinking, his position, and everything he's thinking about will be represented.
Why, he says IGAD ministers have met with all stakeholders, including opposition and estranged groups, headed by General Thomas Cirillo, former Western Equatoria State Governor Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, General Peter Gadet, and former Deputy Chief of Army Staff General Bapeng Montrouille. Why, says the Transitional Government of National Unity and other parties to the agreement have welcomed the revitalization process and plans to include estranged groups. He says IGAD officials and various groups discussed the key areas of concern, and IGAD will now use the outcome of the consultation to prepare for the high-level revitalization forum.
They all agreed to ceasefire, cessation of hostilities, support of the revitalization forum, and realistic timeline as well. So this is a very, very important steps we can build on.
The forum to revive the 2015 peace deal is an initiative spearheaded by the IGAD heads of state during their meeting held in July. IGAD leaders acknowledged the 2015 peace deal has not been implemented and directed the IGAD Council of Ministers to initiate resuscitation of the peace agreement. Why, says although his office is optimistic about the resuscitation of the agreement, but the path ahead is still very rough.
Never said it is it will be easy. But we won't really, we mean it very serious, and we are very determined to lead this country to peace.
Observers and other parties to the peace deal, such as former detainees, have warned that without the full participation of Riek Machar, the new round of talks will likely fail. John Luke, the spokesman for the former detainees, said in an interview with VOA last week that there are many people in the bush still fighting for Riek Machar.
The people who are shooting these days in parts of South Sudan claim to be loyal to Riek Machar. And that by itself is not even allowing the implementation of the permanent ceasefire. I think the fact that he has people who still think they are his supporters and who are armed, that constitutes a problem. It constitutes a problem because you cannot wish that away if there are still people who are fighting. Those guns must be silenced, and a way must be found to silence them.
IGAD is expected to convene the High-Level Revitalization Forum sometime in December.
In Gabon, hip-hop music started as something that was subversive to power, but that line has blurred in recent years. The authorities used hip-hop peaked in 2009 when now President Ali Bongo used Gabonese rap to appeal to youth voters. Alice Ateria Nunes Owango is author of Rap Was Born Here, Music, Power, and Identity in Modern Gabon, which was published last month. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about current censorship in hip-hop in Gabon, the diaspora's role, and more.
It was a big conflict within the hip-hop scene because many conscious hip-hop who present themselves as, conscious rappers and engaged rappers say that it's not possible for rappers to be engaged and involved in such a support of the candidates of the party that is at power since 42 years. And the situation in Gabon is really hard for the youth. There is a big unemployment of the youth. So after this 2009 election, there has been a kind of division of the hip-hop scene between rappers who were involved in campaigns and different parties and concerts organized by the authorities and the conscious and more subversive hip-hop scene.
How do diaspora musicians play a role in the hip-hop scene and in the political scene as well? Are they usually on the side of the opposition?
At the current moment, because there is also a long history of the participation of the diaspora just to the creation of the hip-hop scene itself, because it's from abroad and from the circulation of students and some also young elite that hip-hop was appropriated in Gabon. But at the moment, and since the last decade, I would say it has become even more important because we have more and more Gabonese students who go to study abroad because universities in Gabon have a very bad level. And so we have observed in the last years since Ali Bongo is at power, an increasing of the censorship, and it has become much harder to have a critical discourse in music and even in press and in newspapers. So many rappers have traveled either for their studies or either to run away from this kind of strong repression. So nowadays, it's really from these diasporic networks that main part of hip-hop creation, hip-hop subversive creation, is really claimed.
That was Alice Aterianos Owango, author of Rap Was Born Here Music. She spoke to Ricky Stryak. And that's it for this edition, Wednesday, October 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butt in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.